Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, October the 30th, 300th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, some may argue a day early, Rex Bone.
Well, I'm actually filling in actually for Estelle, remember? So
yeah,
well, and which is I'm more than happy to do.
Still a day early from what many people would anticipate.
Still a day early.
Here, yes.
Still a day early.
This afternoon, we'll talk a little bit about an award that Rex got last week. Kind of a cool little recognition. That's not a little one. It's a significant one. I know you'll downplay it, but it's a significant one. And we'll also talk about some of the other land use issues that are going on throughout the area that are more than just the general plan. There are other things that are going on, and we'll talk about whatever they may be when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Rex Bone. But before we do, our quote this afternoon, you got to love this one. This comes from John Clancy. Quote, "We had seen the light at the end of the tunnel, and it was out."
Not an oncoming train.
No, no, that's right. A little bit of a surprise there for you. So what's the biggest deal going on in the First right now?
Well, you know, there's two things that we have a lot of things going on. I mean, obviously the Salt River Project, which is one of the largest public works projects going on in the county by far. First phase stumbled and tumbled, and the RCD, the Conservation District, Donna and her crew, and they caught up. We are, you know, Mother Nature agreed with us all the way along, except for that little outburst they threw on us here a month ago. And they completed the first phase. They've been able to take
which
out.
Which means, yeah.
Which means they'll be, and they've started working on the vegetation removal on the second phase. And got almost all of the vegetation removal, not quite all of it, but a lot of it done, which will solve the problem. This year when we started out, we had some bird problems. Some nesting birds that stayed a little bit longer, you know, a couple weeks longer, and we couldn't take the vegetation out and disturb the birds. So it threw everything for a little. We had to work around those little birds, and it just, you know, and they were up there. They're a plentiful bird. They weren't an endangered bird, but that's the land and world we live in now. And so we had to accommodate them. And this time around, they will go nest in another place. They have wings, so they can fly to another tree.
That's a concept.
And, yeah. And so we will be able to start the second phase. And hopefully we're going to have the second phase plus, and take some of the, alleviate some of the problems, we hope, farther up the line, and cure the flooding, a lot of the flooding problems that have happened in the valley.
That's what I was thinking. If you can get the underbrush out now, even for phase two, wouldn't that allow things to flow not unimpeded, because there's this thing called dirt?
Well, now it's
a little bit easier, a little bit smoother.
It'll probably help a little bit, but it's just we're still restricted because of the land mass and silt buildup and everything else. I liked, you know, talking to the Del Biagios when you cross the Salt River Bridge there on the highway coming into Vermont. They used to be able to drive their tractors underneath there. Now they can just barely get, he has to lay on his side on his four-wheeler to go underneath it. So that'll give you some of the volume of silt that has come in over the years. And we've seen the old pictures of the schooners loading lumber down
there. That's what I was going to. Is that, or are those pictures used as a reference to what the goal is? Or is that kind of looked at, well, that's what was and that's nice, but that isn't what we're interested in?
Historically,
right now.
Yeah. So they can watch the historical flows of where it did flow and through the channel and into the Eel River and into the, you know, and out the mouth. But in the olden days, I mean, my father-in-law, and you can talk to a lot of the old dairymen. they used to go out, take a Sunday once a year, and they'd go out there and clean the Salt River themselves, clean it out, and then they have a barbecue afterwards. They'd run down there with all their little tractors and stuff. And then the restrictions were put upon them. They couldn't do that anymore, so now it's become. But this is a $16, $18 million project that is coming to fruition.
They used to be done by volunteer labor.
Well, they used to take care of it themselves. And then it just got too restrictive through the paperwork process. And this has been a process.
Is it the 60s and 70s when it started?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And former Jimmy, former Supervisor Jimmy Smith. This is
former Jimmy?
former Supervisor Jimmy Smith. Sorry, buddy. who's still to this day helps with the project whenever he can and shows up at the meetings and stuff. So, and I can never thank him enough for all the insight he always gives me because there's so much institutional knowledge there.
So, what is the project is done through the three phases, what does it look like? A deeper depression?
A lot deeper depression, coffer dams, tidal gates, new tidal gates, to restrict the flows when on the tide so they don't wash back. So we do have the basically the impediment, the flow. The biggest thing is if you have a slow flow, it allows the silt to drop out. If it flushes out, it takes everything with it and keeps your channel clean, just like,
floods.
It floods. So we have a simple process. So, best case scenario, it'll stop a lot of the, Ambrosini Lane out there at Port Kenyon, all the nuisance flooding. And it's not, nuisance flooding sounds like a minor problem, but this is getting into people's houses. They're losing the use of their lands. This has been such a big problem.
Why did it take so long?
This has been in the concept so long because I use the term loosely and I don't mean it derogatory, but it was the Lawyers and Engineers Full Employment Act. You had to have everybody sign off. You had to get the environmental to sign off. We had to count the frogs. We had to count the salamanders. I mean, there were so many avenues to do because it was such a large project.
So now that it's going, It should get wrapped up.
It should go, and we're hopefully I've had great help from our assemblyman and our congressman Jared Huffman, because we have some problems over on Frog Alley, Ambrosini Lane, and that area with Williams Creek, and we're hoping to go up that and take that plug out and take that flooding issue out for those. There's a large group of homeowners of 22 that flood every year. So,
KINS News and Information Times 319. We'll be back with more from Rex Bone.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. The North Coast Repertory Theater is now celebrating its 30th season with 6 treats for Humboldt audiences. First is the George S. Kaufman Moss Hart Pulitzer Prize-winning comedy, You Can't Take It With You. Then the musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, based on the Peanuts comic strip. After the holidays, there'll be a double feature straight from ancient Greece, the murderous tragedy Oedipus the King and the comedy Women in Congress. Next is the side-splitting Complete Works of William Shakespeare, a parody in which all 17 of the Bard's plays are played in 97 minutes. Late Spring features the North Coast premiere of the popular Les Miserables. The season ends with The Poor of New York, a melodrama from 1857 of the problems of a middle-class family not all that different from today's. For dates, times, and details, call 442-6278. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic organization dedicated to the people and events that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Rex Bone. Rex, the concept of cleaning out is neat, it's cool, it's historical, it feels good, all that kind of stuff. And yet there's still the remnants. When we pull fuel tanks out, when fuel tanks are pulled out of projects, there's the cleanup, and then the dirt goes somewhere and something magical happens and everybody's okay with it. When you dig out the bay, the dredging spoils. Okay, you have to go to this special place and drop it off. Okay. When you dredge a river that's been clogged for decades, what do you do with that?
We were able to use all this material, the RCD, and they were able to phase it all in and use it for banking material. And to set up the new dikes, and they put it in, they've replanted it, they've shored it up,
just
rolled
dirt?
It in, the silt and the dirt,
No infrastructure inside of it.
No,
to keep it?
No, it's all natural. From what I understand.
Isn't that the problem we have with the sloughs around the bay? Is that it's all just mud, and after a little bit of time, it starts silting?
Well, these are more. These are engineered, and they're compacted. They're rolled in, and then on their places, if you go out there, you'll look at their places of heavy wear, which is the flows, the flood. You have rock, and you have, you know, there is a lot of material other than dirt being used. And then with the use of the cofferdams and the tidal gates and everything else, those high areas to stop away from erosion and things like that. So,
other than a significant memorable flood, which would just inundate everything, how beneficial is this for the normal seasonal flooding that we have? Will it take care of some of the flooding in downtown Ferndale in conjunction with some of the other projects that have been done? Does this really serve as a safe thing as well as a convenience thing?
This project, and I mean even in my short time in office, but being aware that it was coming, the amount of cooperation both from the Salt River Watershed Council, which has started to oversee this, a group of the affected landowners and things like that, plus Jay Parrish from the city of Ferndale is there, because if the water now that affects Ferndale, it's not going to get any better. So they all realize the benefits of this. And then we talk about flooding, but a lot of this, what we call minor flooding, is regular flooding to the people at Port Kenyon and Ambrosini Frog Alley and things like this. It happens with an inch of rain, because it's just it you don't have anywhere for the water to run but flat out and spread out. And it's
because this hasn't been allowed to occur for so long.
Because they haven't been able to keep this up, and they've got plugs and they've got vegetation and things like that. So it's going to realize that, you know, the proper cleaning of the channels would help a lot of the valleys. And then,
can I ask the stupid local question? Why was it allowed to get to that point? Why didn't you just get out there and pull the weeds? And if the trees start growing up, you get out there with a clipper, knock it down.
I'm not exactly sure, but if I was guessing, and this is just what I can see from the outside looking in, and what I understand is they used to do that quite a bit, and then it got restrictive to do that. And I think some of the old timers still do a lot of that out there. You know, I'm going to protect
my property.
My property
was flooding. I would take care of whatever it was to avoid the flooding.
But now with the restrictions and so many channels to protect our, you know, our environment and the species that are out there and the critters and things like that, it pulled back, and then for a while it just never got maintained, and then from just a short time of non-maintenance, what used to be just a biannual, you know, maintenance program turned into a major thing, and then all of a sudden now you have to get the funding, you have to go through the EIR, you have to go through all things, and this is kind of what I would venture that this turned into. And as the whole time we're trying to get it permitted, it doesn't fix itself, it just gets, you know, it just got worse. And that's why I applaud Jimmy and Congressman Mike Thompson and all the guys that jumped on board. They realize if we keep looking the other way, it's not going to get any better. And these guys stepped up, and they got the first phase done. Ducks Unlimited stepped up. A lot of funding agencies came together to make this happen. And now we're proceeding now with the second phase funding.
Tell me why government run amok is not an applicable phrase for this. To get
well,
to this
because
point.
I'm in the government, so I'm not going to say we're amok.
Oh, I get it.
It's.
I mean, it just seems like it's one of those things that was working nicely. Nobody was getting harmed. The fish were flowing or swimming, and the crickets were cricketing, and the frogs were frogging, and everybody was okay. And now all of a sudden we're being protected from ourselves, and the only thing that's getting harmed are budgets and people's livelihoods.
You know, and I look at that and I see, I probably know more how government works than I ever did, you know, and I'm not as quick to be as mad or jump to conclusions and things like that, because it actually does work fairly well. Does it work? And it works fairly efficient. But what we did is we had a long time where we didn't think about the environment as we expanded, as, you know, the fears that happened. And so now we've gone to the other extreme, and it's hard to get anything done.
Pitting the pendulum does come to mind. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:30.
decade of difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Rex Bone. Rex, considering some of the different challenges that are out there, every once in a while you get a chance to celebrate some victories, or people get a chance to celebrate and you're part of it. Last week you had your, you know, I did not realize that it's no longer the Redwood Empire chapter of Boy Scouts of America. When I saw Crater Lake, I thought you had either been interloping or that somebody got their geography screwed up. But they kind of did a cool thing for you.
Yeah, and it was they named me their Distinguished Citizen of the Year, and I kind of balked at it because I've gotten other awards, and I was telling Dan earlier, awards, all they do is reward the community, because I don't build Redwood Fields, I don't do these auctions, I don't do it without somebody goes out and gets the items and supports the cause. Redwood Fields was probably one of the biggest things done for youth in this area, and I was, you know, I'm still proud of that, to all the friends I made to it, and I really enjoy people that I know helped coming out there. I mean, I look back at most of the contractors have all now since had kids or grandkids playing out there, and they come out there and they smile and did the right thing. And the vision that a lot of us had back then, that we could build a class facility for football, soccer, and baseball, the fruition of it with 500-600 games a year being played there continuously and doing it all without government funds is a pretty amazing thing, really. So I appreciate that. But and so many other things that I get credit for, and it's actually a community thing. But the Crater Lake Council of the Boy Scouts, which used to be the Redwood Empire, and it's Northern California and Southern Oregon, and some of the former winners of this award were, you know, Harvey Harper, Lesson Midwest Fall, John Winsler, but outside in 1987, Charles Schultz was the winner, and of Peanuts fame. And I says, wow, that's, you know, it was very, very nicely done, very, very professional event. They had some video testimonials from some friends of mine from grade school, and friends that are still friends, and believe it or not, after, you know, 50 years later, and it was a very, very nice event. And Adina and I were very honored. My sisters were there, and Trevor had sent a note. Trevor actually was working working the night of it, so he had to work. So he sent a note, and he says, "You want me to take the night off?" And I said, "No, I want you to work." So that's a good thing. So.
And there's no truth to the rumor that they dipped you in the lake.
No, none at all.
Okay. I understand, so it's kind of cold.
So, yeah.
Particularly now that there's a little snow.
Yeah,
down.
Yeah. So it was a very nice done event. I had a couple hundred of my friends show up, and we had a really nice time.
Kind of makes it worthwhile sometimes.
Well, it does. And when you think about the Boy Scouts, I mean, especially locally, I mean, I flash back on Riggs Johnston. I mean, that's who I think of. I mean, Mr. Boy Scout and one of the greatest family men you'd ever run into. But then Frank Yeager was there, and then John Friedenbach, who's now head of the local chapter that's involved with the Crater Lake, but this part, this region, Mickey Holstrom from that, all these guys. And lately I've been involved with a lot more Eagle Scout projects, because they've done them out at the ball fields and setting them up. And it's just, they're fine young kids who grow into be great adults. And I think it's, I had a guy tell me last night, when he looks at applications, if he sees they're an Eagle Scout, he doesn't read anymore. He just hires them and figures he can teach them the job. If they've got that far, he can teach them the job. So, I mean, it's when you look back at the former presidents that have been Eagle Scouts and things like that, it's pretty amazing. And senators and governors and things like that, it's only 2% become Eagle Scouts. But the Boy Scouts teach so many values that, you know, and set the bar so high. It was quite an honor for me.
So when something like that does happen, do you kind of pause and go, hey, it must be doing something okay here?
You know, you...
Yeah, no, you're the point of everything.
You do, and I just, and again, and I said this, you know, at the event, it just makes me happy that, you know, we're pretty lucky here in Humboldt County, because I said it earlier that here, when you're doing things for youth or the betterment of community, not necessarily youth, but I do a lot more for youth than almost anything, but we do a lot of fundraisers. When you're doing things in this community, you look out, it doesn't matter if they have an RD, Tea Party, or Independent, or whatever the case may be. We can all agree that it's a good cause and we all work hard for it. We may not all agree on Tuesday or the rest of the week and things like that, but we don't hold the grudges. It's just the way it goes. And so that's the heartwarming part. There's very few people that, no matter, that dislike something. They can dislike the decision that's made, but at the end of the day, it's a good thing. So
we'll spot you that one.
There you
KINS
go.
News and Information Times 340. We'll be back with more from Rex Bone.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:43. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Rex Bone. Rex, some of the different challenges that are out there, I would imagine, is at the root, the community trying to simplify things. We don't know, general plan. Okay, we don't really know, and probably most of us don't really care. It's something somebody else has been doing battle on. You mentioned passion. Yeah, there's a lot of people that are passionate about this or passionate about that. Fine. Let them deal with the numbers. Let them deal with the stuff. Let the experts get into play. How familiar do you think the general community is about what government does?
I to downplay the importance of the general plan, you can't. It is the blueprint that we're going to take ourselves into the next 20 years. So we have to follow that, and we need to set it so it's a workable document.
But there are amendments that are done.
You bet.
Adjustments, and state law will do. So rough guideline. Okay. That's about as deep as most folks in the community are going to go into it. Yeah, and maybe if they're looking for a specific piece of property, well, that's what the realtor's job is supposed to do.
Well, and
okay, fine. I mean, and you guys are down in the you're down at the granular level. Most of us are up,
exactly.
circling 2,000 feet up. Okay, fine. Trust you guys to do what you're going to do. Some will turn into a political statement, some won't. But with just the general stuff that government does, do we appreciate it?
I appreciate it a lot more than I did, let's say, a year and a half ago, because the little intricacies.
Well, you've been drinking in the fountain, too.
Yeah. Well, no, but the intricacies of, I said the hardest part about this job, and I won't waver from it, is coming out of the private sector and going into the public sector, because you just say, hey, why don't you go put that up? Well, you don't do that. You have to look at the long-term effects of, and it's kind of like studying something. We have to study things. I've always said, let's just do it and make it an actual study. And if it doesn't work, we're going to find out it doesn't work. And if it works,
take it down.
We're ahead of the game.
Yeah.
But it's not that simple, because everything is so, we're so reportive to the public. We have to answer. So when you make a mistake, you have to report. How did you make that? Why did you? Did you not think about what you were doing?
The flagpole shouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
My fault.
Yeah.
But the flag looked pretty good for the 5 years it was there and nobody got hurt.
But if you put it there and the flagpole falls, now you've got some realization.
But you put it in properly.
Exactly. But you should have known where you were putting it. I agree.
Let me throw it in a different angle then. How much more challenging is government in California than it would be in Wyoming, Utah, Colorado, Montana? Those areas they call the flyover states.
Well,
how much more challenging is it here because of exactly what you were just saying?
You talk to people to do businesses in those states, and they say an awful lot. There's still a large amount of people that want to do business in California. But when we've talked about this, about state compensation insurance. State compensation insurance is, let's say, a third of what it is. I mean, it's three times as much here as it is in Oregon. So with our closeness to the Oregon border, we get a lot of contractors to come down that log, do roads and things like that in this area. And since they're based out of there and do all their hiring and their payroll goes out of Oregon, that's the comp they pay, not because they're here. Well, the problem with that being is I can't imagine someone in Oregon bleeds any less than a guy from California if he, you know, cuts himself with a saw or something happens. So, I mean, or heals
unless
any
it's
quicker.
The heart.
Yeah,
unless it's,
heart.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm just, those little things. So the bureaucracy on those agencies and things like that. And for a while, you know, Schwarzenegger did a little bit with the state comp. I mean, he sucked it in a little bit where it was easier on everybody. But now it's, you know, and that's just one, and I'm sure I'm not very versed on it. I just know that's
times,
one
times,
of the things.
Times,
you, yeah.
Times, times, yeah.
And that's a state problem. But all we're, like the general plan, we said it the other day, is we're trying to not streamline the permit so they can get it, still follow our guidelines, still follow the CEQA guidelines if it's needed, an EIR if it's needed. Not be damned with the environmental laws, but also don't be so restrictive that it can't happen.
Or it can happen, but only if you have a lot of money and a lot of time.
Yeah, and because if it's...
And that really forces the caste system far more than what would happen naturally.
Exactly. I mean, I can remember when we were fighting about the Target store, and we had to move the Target store 10 feet, and we had to change the color of the roof. And I don't know which agency requested that, but it was delay after delay after delay. And those things, if projects are delayed, the asphalt companies, the concrete companies, the guys at the building supply, they don't make their money. You know, and
the project just doesn't occur, and nobody does anything.
Nobody makes anything. We don't increase our tax base, and we don't increase the shopping experience for our local people that could maybe save a little money, don't have to go to Reading to buy these certain things.
Speaking of that, have you heard anything about Richardson's Grove and the bypass? Is that progressing? Are we going to get that thing straightened out and get some of that stuff here?
The last, they have actually charted every tree since they had six trees that were in. So Caltrans expects it to go out to bid. And most of the restrictions are going to be met. And you have to understand, we're still not cutting any redwood trees, any large redwood trees. It's mainly saplings and things through there to make it more available to STAA vehicles. Now, you have to understand, we talked about this. These aren't large trucks. This is a 48 to a 53-foot trailer. And what this does, it allows our local vendors like Sun Valley, Lost Coast, to actually send a full shipment to the East Coast, which allows local businesses with local people to lower their prices to compensate for the transportation to the East Coast.
They don't have more competitive.
So we can be more competitive. We have products. Barbara Groom, I mean, she's spending I don't know how much to expand Lost Coast. So she needs to sell that product, but she's going to have 60 people making that product, a good local, nationally renowned product. Started here and all over the country, but she needs to get it out of here, and we need to help her get that with a lot of other small businesses. That's why Richardson's Grove
stuff coming in is less expensive.
We need to be able to have the same. We need to able to have the same access as everybody else in the country.
Thanks for coming by.
Always a pleasure.
It's always done. Yeah, we've been talking shop this afternoon with distinguished citizen Rex Bone. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Have somebody else see you tomorrow.